Happy Monday, everyone. That is, if it's Monday when you're listening to this. Regardless, let's talk about what we've got going on this week. We got a chance to sit down with Captain Will McNutt of the Downtown Fishing Company to have a great conversation about many different things, but mainly some potential closures in the Gulf and Atlantic fisheries. Captain Will is a true jack of all trades. This is his fourth time on the show and only the second time we've actually spoken about fishing. In addition to being an amazing fishing captain, Will is also an accomplished elk hunter and guide. He's truly a man of many talents and interests. If you guys want to jump back, we've got, like I said, there's another episode titled Down South Fishing Company and a couple of them titled something like The Captain Goes West. That's all Will, some of his fishing and hunting exploits, elk hunting trips. They're really great episodes. But with the Mudbug Bash fast approaching, tickets are flying out the door, so make sure you pre-register for the poker run with your everyday email, and we'll make sure you get your free year of Spartan Forge to help you navigate your way through your next outdoor adventure. In the meantime, you need to slide down to the podcast description and grab some tickets to win a Silencer Co. Hybrid 46 before they're gone. We're only selling 250 tickets, and I don't think we've got that many left. The tickets are only $25 a piece or $5 for $100. So if you win, you fill out the paperwork, and we'll foot the bill and everything, including the tax stamp. Got to be 21 or older to win. Sorry, I don't make the rules. So don't miss out on that opportunity. And lastly, if you don't want to miss out on any future hunts, make sure you hop over to our Patreon and join our hunting community. Make sure you're getting it. Make sure you're getting while the getting's good, and hop over to the Hasmore Outdoor Products page and shop around their website. When you find yourself just the right piece of gear, make sure you use code UPO15 at checkout. Get yourself 15% off your order, as well as help us keep this show rolling. Let's jump into this episode. I'm your host, Will Krebs, and this is the Under Pressure Outdoors Podcast.
Yeah,
I don't want to be blasphemed and then find out that it ain't quite that way. You know, that maybe there's a rumor mill going around, but I don't doubt that they're probably trapping elk and selling them.
Well, I know that
they definitely are, because there was no hunters, there was no elk. So we just started knocking on doors, like, hey, have y'all seen it? Like, yeah, man.
Pull that mic a little closer to your face.
They used to eat out of the flower beds and stuff. He said they were everywhere. He said, but they would like start vandalizing cemeteries and stuff. Like, they would knock over headstones and all that. People started complaining about it, and then the state just trapped them all. They're gone.
Said, yeah, but they trapped them out.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, I mean, that's kind of, I kind of look at that, I'm like, that's not a bad idea, because you're probably getting, the other states are probably paying more money than you're going to make on an elk tag to transfer the elk over there. But I know, like, Tennessee had elk. They all came from the herd in Cates Cove when they started that herd 20-something years ago, and it blew up. And then the strip mining they did in Kentucky for coal really made great habitat for them, so they flourished really well in Kentucky because it made the big plateaus and stuff like that up there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it seemed terrible, and it really wasn't a great thing to do, but it turned out to be really damn good elk habitat.
It was pretty cool because the habitat in Kentucky is upside down compared to out west. It's unnatural for them. In the daytime, they're up. At nighttime, they're up high, and at the daytime, they go down in the holes in the thick timber. And it's backwards out west. They go up the mountain in the daytime to hide, and then at night they come down to the valleys and the pastures feed. And everything and feed. We call it the dance floor, and it's just completely opposite in the east.
That'd have been interesting. They kill some absolute hammers.
Real heavy elk up there.
Yeah, their state record is a freaking giant by any standard.
Well, there's plenty to eat, man. I mean, they've got And they got winters and things, but the winters aren't as tough as they are out west. And then it's not as dry, so there's no shortage of food. You know, it's interesting, though, is whether the elk are in... Whether the elk are in Kentucky, or whether they're being moved to Tennessee, or whether they're going to West Virginia, they're still elk. And I got to think that you go forward another 25 years, and pretty soon there's just going to be elk everywhere on the East Coast. They'll be wandering into North Georgia.
That's what they're supposed to be there. I hope they get in North Georgia.
It'd be nice.
Anywhere. So we got to talking on elk because... you're not just a fishing guy anymore.
Yeah, I do it all now.
Not just a fishing captain. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, you're talking, you're going up. I just seen on your Instagram you catching that big bluefin tuna.
Yeah, I spent the month of August last year in Chatham Cape Cod, which is where the Mayflower first tried to land, and then there's a lot of history up there, and then they hung a right and went around Cape Cod seashores and landed at Plymouth Rock, and spent a month up there catching bluefin and white marlin and crap load of striper. It was just a wonderful place. Blue whales everywhere. See 50 blue whales a day just rolling by the boat. It's nuts.
Those things are massive. That's the biggest animal on the planet, right?
I said blue whale, didn't I?
You did.
I meant to say humpback.
Okay.
It was minkies and humpback whales. Never seen any blue whales.
You didn't put a shank in a minke? No. The Japanese are knocking them out, but
yeah,
Japanese and the Russians.
They'll be over here fishing if we let them.
Yeah. But. I need a whale. I know I probably just lost everything we had. if it was legal, I would put a harpoon in a whale in a heartbeat.
Well, why not? I mean, I don't. Inuit tribes still do it.
Yep.
They look delicious.
Yeah. Well, the whale fat.
Yeah.
I mean, all the stuff they make out of fat and all that stuff.
You know how much rendered fat you can get out of a 50-foot whale?
enough to power the lamps on the Mayflower across the Atlantic. I can tell you that.
fry up a season's worth of taters. Yeah. Screw that bacon grease, boy.
Yeah. wonder what kind of flavor that gives your food.
Imagine how they smelled living off of whale blubber for months on a ship.
That's a valid point.
Yeah,
and you can't really bathe anywhere because, I mean, salt water doesn't get you. You might be able to wash the dirt off, but you don't feel clean when you're done.
No.
Dude, you read the old accounts of that. You think they're out there slamming whales every day, but it wasn't, because they're out there chasing around in ships. And like every other critter, the whales knew when the jig was up, right? So you had to have the wind in your favor and all that other stuff. So there was a lot of days of just absolute boredom. But, man, when they got on the whales, they went after them with everything they had in wooden freaking boats. Mm-hmm. Like, man, holy cow.
You can see how they target them, though, because they have to come up for air.
Yeah.
And the harder you push them, you know, the more they have to breathe. And you can see them for miles.
Yeah. Now, I've seen them in Alaska. I've seen them in California. Obviously, I wasn't hunting them. But they're... Yeah, I said I'd put a shank in a whale. I would, like a minke whale, but I don't know if I'd be too thrilled about.
What the heck is
a minke whale's a little one. They're bigger than dolphins, but there's a bunch of them.
They're pretty big.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not the size of a blue whale. They're smaller than a humpback, but they're still pretty big.
Yeah.
They're probably 20 something feet.
Really? I didn't know they were that big.
Yeah.
Jim's out here just ready to shake a baby minke. But
I'd put a harpoon in a dolphin if they were legal. At least one.
You know what, man?
I'm curious what everything tastes like. I'm indiscriminate.
My grudge against dolphins has nothing to do with wanting to know what they taste like. Fish stealing thing.
Yeah.
But same with sharks, man. They're just tearing anything you can try and pull up off the bottom, around the shallow water, whatever. It don't matter. And the dolphins are worse about it in the shallow water sometimes than the sharks are.
I've never had a problem with dolphins. You have dolphins snatching stuff off your boat,
yeah.
Will?
Oh, yeah. They'll take snook out of your hands.
Wow.
When you're trying to revive a snook. At night, they'll take it out of your hands.
Then fight a tarpon for 30 minutes and watch a shark come up
right when you get it to the boat.
Well, yeah. I got an app for that, man. I always carry some steel leader and a quick attachment when the sharks come up and start pounding.
Yeah, from about Mobile to, it's really like Panama City. Now, it used to be Cape Sandblast. It was, the issues were porpoise there for taking your fish. Like taking grouper, snapper, they get 20 feet from your boat and they would, grab it, like literally de-hook. They can like shake their head and roll it and like de-hook your fish and swim off with it.
No kidding.
And then everywhere else is sharks.
Huh. I see them all. Maybe I've lost fish to dolphin and not noticed it. They are all over St. Joe Bay. Yeah.
There's wrecks out there in the Atlantic now that you can pull up to, and there'll be five or six sharks to swim up to your boat before you ever drop a line.
Oh, yeah.
Waiting on it.
So what are you doing in an instance like that? What can you do?
You can hook one fish, show everyone on the boat that it's not possible to get them up, and you drive off. It's just, you spend your days running from sharks, trying to find a spot that they didn't wake up that morning to hunt.
Does anybody still go out and fish sharks on charter boats? Yeah. I know there was, way back in the day, I want to say it was like a youth group trip or something that I went on. Mm-hmm. We went on some sort of a shark fishing charter at night, and it's a big party boat. And we're just catching reef sharks or whatever.
Mm-hmm. We do a lot of shark charters out of New Smyrna, being though it's the shark bite capital of the world. Just get behind the shrimp boats and stuff right off the beach. It's actually really fun. Catching black tips. You can kill black tips. And
yeah.
Pretty good to eat.
Well, they eat good. I've got some of that. Still got some of that smoked shark over there in the freezer that you gave me.
I didn't smoke.
What is it?
Uh-oh.
No, it's not smoked. It's that's fine tooth.
Yeah.
Fine-tooth shark, though. I soaked it in milk for a day. So I bled it and then soaked it and then rinsed it before I froze it. So if you prepare that shark the way you're supposed to prepare it, like a swordfish steak, and then peeled you got to peel the hide off.
Right.
And you served it to somebody and told them they were eating swordfish, they probably wouldn't question you.
Well, we had it in that soup.
Yeah. I like shark.
Yeah, I do too. In fact, I need to take it out and thaw it out and prepare it. I forget about it until we get to talking about fish.
Yeah.
And then it's there. It's still, I mean, it's not freezer burn or anything. It's still sitting in there just fine.
Yeah. No, I like using sharks in core bouillon and gumbos and things like that because it holds up really well. You can stew it for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, and long after it's not tough and it just doesn't fall apart. There's just enough cartilage in it. And it's delicious.
It's good. It's just good to make, like, cut up in, like, Chick-fil-A size nuggets and fry. That's what I recommend doing. Can't beat it.
You know, you fry just about anything and make it taste good. Fry it in the right grease. Oh, man. I can imagine frying that up in some beef tallow would probably be really dang good.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I fried up. I'll never do it again. I caught a black drum, just a breeder. I mean, holding it up and it's, dangling on the cut it off the beach. And we killed it and we cut it up and had all kinds of meat for days. And I tried frying it up and it wasn't like fish. It was more like chicken. It just didn't have the right texture, man. I was shocked that fried, at least a big one, fried black drum is ugh.
So this happened to me, Will, last time I went, deep sea fishing after we got home and ate something in there.
Was that on my boat?
No, sir.
Oh, thank God.
No.
we ate a barracuda.
Yeah.
You hear my insurance company knocking on the door.
No. And you know, it's what, that was on Briar's bachelor party last July, August or July. And, we had gone down with Boca Raton.
Yeah.
And went down there and shot some iguanas, and then one day, and then went on a half day deep sea trip the next day, and I don't know, barracuda or something else we ate off that trip. My brother, he's like, "What are you gonna be all right?" I was like, "Yeah, man, I'll probably be fine. Like my throat's not closing up. I'm just really hot and itchy." And like he's like, "Well, what are you gonna do?" I was like, "Go to sleep."
What do we kill? Is a barracuda and a wahoo, or what do we kill? Barracuda and a,
I don't remember.
Well, we had one really good fish, and we had a barracuda, and I was like, I ain't eating that.
Did you Did y'all eat any of it, or was it just something y'all
yeah. the boat? We think yeah. we got no, it no, confused.
Did you break out after you ate?
Oh, yeah. It was after I ate. It's something I ate. One of the fish that I ate. It wasn't something on the boat.
I just got exhausted and went to bed, and he woke up with the hives.
I went to bed with the hives. I didn't wake up.
Oh, yeah. He goes to bed with the hives, but I felt exhausted. I think we had Ciguatera.
Yeah. Ciguatera doesn't do that to you, right?
It can.
Give you a rash. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, you just had Ciguatera from a barracuda.
Yeah, could have.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man.
Hey, you have the immunities of it.
Huh? Yeah, right.
You don't have to have the booster shot.
They have a shot for Ciguatera?
No, you just eat a fish with it and hope you live. Yeah,
eat it a second time.
That's the problem. I think it's a cumulative toxin. Eat the next one, and you know, you might be doing the thing where they lock you down and they have to artificially respirate you, but your brain still works. So you know
but it wears off eventually.
Isn't that what they're doing to Walt Disney?
He's still alive.
They got him in a mason jar in a cooler.
Just the eyes and the brain, you know.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Out there in a cemetery in Cassia.
Yeah. We have, well, first off, let me introduce everybody we got. We're dang near 15 minutes in. I'm your host, Will Krebs. I've got my dad, Bill, in here. We've got Jim over there.
Yes, sir.
And Captain Will. So Will, Bill, Jim, Will. Don't let that confuse you.
Say that five times fast.
Right?
Yeah.
We'll get it figured out one way or another. But we're talking about some of the stuff that's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. As far as...
we'll even get into some of the stuff in the Atlantic. Because, I mean, they're doing the exact same thing at the same time.
Let's talk about that first. You were saying, was it the tilefish?
Yeah, the golden tilefish. And it's never really been an issue in the past. And this year, they shutting it down February 29th, shutting it down for all year. You're not allowed, recreationally, you will not be able to catch golden tile. And the regulations before that was no size limit, one per person, however many people on the boat. And they're saying that we have already filled the recreational quota for the year since January 1st. And there's been, honest to God, 8 days that you could get offshore safely.
Yeah, you deep drop for those things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. you're fishing, you know, 1,300 feet to 500 feet.
Yeah.
It's a big range, but, you know, they can support that depth.
Right.
You know, it's just... There's no way that data is correct. There's no way. Even if every boat that left the inlet was going specifically for golden tile and had electric reels and knew where to catch them.
How big are these fish? Golden tile fish.
A monster is 30 pounds. An average is 5 pounds.
So not super big either.
It's a... Like just like a normal size reef fish, you know, like a grouper or a snapper.
And is that a species that people go out there and like actively seek to catch? I wouldn't think so if it's only one fish per person.
Yeah, it's the best table fare for a bottom dwelling species.
Yeah,
I would say the best. So it's highly sought after because it's kind of a new thing. Deep dropping is still new to, you know, us as fishermen, and very few people know where to catch them or how, so it is sought after.
Gotcha.
I think it's one of the species that's on like the Florida, what are they, the Florida angler list, you know, to get all the species.
Yeah,
I think it's one of the ones that's on there.
It's a big thing.
It's a strange looking fish.
A big old eyeball on it.
Well, that's because they blow out when they come to the surface.
I can pull up a yellow edge grouper, or I can pull up a snowy grouper, wreck fish, anything like that, and it'll blow all that out of him. That a tilefish, the way God made him, you can pull him up out of 900 foot of water, and when he makes it to 9 feet, if the hook pops out, he will turn around, do this, and right back to the bottom.
It looks, the way that fish looks, to accurately describe it, looks like what you would catch on a corn dog.
Yes. it looks like somebody designed it in a lab.
Yeah. I feel like if you looked up a picture of a dork fish, that's about what it looks like.
If they didn't have the colors that they have, they would be a very ugly fish.
Yeah.
Very ugly.
You could make a really good cartoon character out of that.
Yeah. It looks like something off a cartoon.
Yeah.
Some animation, something.
I'm going to ask you a loaded question. You know where they are? You know how to catch them?
I do.
next season. They open that sucker back up. We'll be on a boat.
I'm actually abnormally good at it for the amount of time where I've me and my friend kind of pioneered it out of Ponce Inlet. No one caught them out of there ever. But where you were supposed to catch them were like 100 miles down the coast. They're like, there's no way there's none out of here. And we just started just pounding the bottom in the right depth and found them. And now it's a thing out of Ponce Inlet.
I'd imagine it takes you quite a while to get a fish up from that deep, though.
We got electric reels.
Just push the button. Pop the beer, baby. It'll be up a little bit.
It's the problem is resetting your gear. You got to hit it right, or you know, every drop, you know, from the time your bait gets to the bottom or you drift through and you're reeling back up, you're talking about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And if you screw that up and you do 20, you know, four times, do that math, I mean, you burn up a lot of your day.
Yeah.
So you got to be right.
I got to brag on you a minute. We went out with you last time. You really spoiled Jim, because we went out. The day we went out was like the perfect seas. And we were trolling for, I can't remember what he wanted to troll for. Didn't catch much of that. Then trying to catch some reef fish just to take home. Mm-hmm. And the whole time we're coming back, we're all thinking like, man, in the shitty weather we had that one day we went out with Will, as high as the seas were, and we're still just yanking him up left and right the whole day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You compare the last time we went out with Briar, we caught bupkis, but with Will in the shitty weather, we couldn't keep the damn red snapper off us, man. If you got high on that reef, it was red, red, red. But we were crushing the vermilion and the lane snapper.
Yeah. The lane snapper this year has been a record-breaking numbers. It's
really
been incredible. I mean, even the people that really don't know what they're doing is smashing them. I mean, people are going
to get them out of
the
sand, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't say that too loud. They'll shut us down. They find out you're catching them, they'll pull it from you.
And we talked about this before we started the show. When they close the red snapper season, you go out there and you can't beat the dang things off you with a stick. You have to leave a spot because it's so full of red snapper, you can't catch anything else, and you can't keep those. I mean, they put up a dang good fight.
Oh, yeah. But most of my day is catching red snapper and releasing them. And there's so many on the East Coast now that they've expanded their range from the beach, literally catching them right off the beach, all the way to 450 feet. You go ask a biologist and they'll call you a liar, say they can't live there. It's too, the depth is too much.
But you're pulling them up.
And we're catching them out. They're, you know, their scales are sticking straight out like hair because, you know, the pressure as they're coming up. And they're not supposed to be there, but they've expanded the range so much because there's so many of them.
It was my understanding when they started doing all these closures, and they're basing this off the habitat that they know they live in, and then they go and they found a bunch of them somewhere else in an area where they quote-unquote shouldn't have been out in the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
every place I go, and I'm not in the business, man, but every place I go and I talk to anybody that fishes about red snapper, they roll their eyes and they're like, it's just ridiculous. Like, it's time to expand the season.
What did the season used to be? Or has it always been this restricted?
No.
No, it used to be, you know, before my time, it was kind of free reign. There used to be more grouper and less snapper. It was more of a natural. But now it's just I think humans have made the scale way out of balance from overfishing one species and leaving the other ones unchecked.
Right.
I don't know. You know, there's a tavern, or I think it's called Salties, or doesn't matter. It's over in Clearwater. It's Frenchie's Saltwater Cafe, I think is what it's called, over in Clearwater. And if I'm not mistaken, they got their start because you could go over and buy a grouper sandwich, and it was dirt cheap because when they started out, grouper was considered a trash fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they that is 100% right. The out of Ponce Inlet, those old guys that are still running boats, they would tell you stories that they would go out and they would catch 20-headed grays. That's what they call a gag grouper, and 20-25 of them, and they'd clean them on the back of the boat on the way in. And they would get to a certain amount of meat, and the customers would say, "Oh, we don't want any more," and they would just throw it out. That's how many there was.
Yeah, That's crazy.
I said you used to couldn't even sell it at the market because the market would be saturated and there's like, you know, nobody's buying it. It's Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And then you go into, and I'm assuming they're commercial fishermen.
Those were charters, but back then you could sell fish off of a charter legally. Yeah, there was kind of the Wild West when it come to it. But there was no market for tuna until Miami Vice come out. You couldn't sell yellowfin tuna, but there was no price for it. And then the TV shows made it really cool, and now it's through the roof.
I must be missing something there.
It wasn't specifically Miami Vice. It was that time frame that ahi tuna become a delicacy, and it was something that, you know, either, you know, location or that was a financial status if you could eat sushi.
I was gonna say people figured out you could eat it raw and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, there's another fish. I almost don't want to tell you what it is. There is a fish that I see people throwing back all the time. It's easy to catch. And man, it is fantastic as sushi. Most people that do take it smoke it. But
what is it?
Turn the damn microphone off, I'll tell you. Oh. Next thing you know,
manatee.
No, it's a really common fish.
I prefer my manatee with poached bald eagle eggs on the side.
Yeah. I'd eat an eagle too while we're at it. While I'm pissing people off. Put an eagle season in there. I'll be the first one to put one down.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That's like eating a buzzard.
My country. Yeah,
it's a buzzard with sharp claws.
Yeah. And a pretty white head.
Yeah. Until it's covered in shit from digging around at something dead on the side of the road.
They all start looking similar once you get the feathers off them.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. But so what this is, we really come in here to talk, I guess, mainly about the Gulf Reef Council. And they're, is it an outright closure or are they shrinking the bag limit again?
That meeting this year that ended in February is, they were proposing shutting it down all the way to 2026. I mean, as me and you know, we've been searching all day and we can't find any actual data. They won't give us the numbers and they won't give us like what they actually have done or doing, but that's what they were proposing, shutting it down completely and just letting a rebuild program for the gag grouper in the Gulf.
I'm sure you could pull, if I had the time and have thought about it, you could probably pull like a public information request and get a recording of the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But because I know they film all this stuff on the Florida Channel, I'm sure like a lot of FWC or commission meetings do. But I don't know. And that the Gulf Council, that's not just Florida. That's Florida, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas, everything that touches the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
That's playing into that. Because I went through and I was reading through a lot of the comments on closures or shrinking of bag limits from back in 2022, I think was when that one was from. And a lot of those people, you know, some are from Florida. A lot of them are from Texas and Mississippi, Louisiana, and you got people that are from out of New York that are talking about, you know, we used to come down there for vacation, just specifically planning a vacation around going out fishing for a red snapper. And if you're going to shrink it, then what's the point? You're going to close season early. I plan a vacation. Now I can't do what I wanted to do because you closed season before I ever got there. And I did figure out today that they do some sort of crazy math equation where they take the number of fishing days times the number of licenses sold or vice versa. Versus some way around, and that's how they come up with the bag limit that you can keep.
Well,
the number of fish.
All four of us in this room have fishing license, right?
Right. And the last time I fished was August in freshwater.
And when was the last time you caught a red snapper?
Last time I was with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And your numbers are in this data.
I have the reef angler permit. I buy the gold sportsman's license, mm-hmm. and I sign it for all that stuff because I'm like, well, you know, maybe I'll go this year. I don't know. And I just want to have it in case I go. So I get added into that data, but I never go. So,
well, now with all the lifetime licenses, there's guys that are going to be in that data every year forever.
Right.
And then, I bought one.
And then, two, when you look at data from 2020 and 2021, you're looking at grossly inflated data because nobody was working because of COVID. There were the license number sales across the U.S. skyrocketed during that time in the spring because it was one of the only things you could do.
The only thing you could do was go outside.
Right. Right.
It was indoor recreation.
Yeah. The fish counts in the Atlantic and the Gulf and anywhere that I've seen that NOAA puts on or the state is so inaccurate, and it's sad. And it's not even the people doing the counts. It's the people that they're reporting to.
So I'm going to defend them a little bit from what I understand, what I think. The way it's been explained to me, and I'm probably going to butcher this. There are places where the fish are thick and they still remain thick, and everybody knows about them, and that's why if you fish in those places, you very much feel like this population is fantastic. But these guys also go out and do studies where they expect to find a few, and the problem is they're finding none. Which then, you know, and then they're taking these, they got a dope chart, right? And that's really the issue, is in the places where they should have a wider range to be less common, there are none. So the only place where the fish are in these fantastic areas. And what they're worried about, let me finish, what they're worried about is that all of a sudden there is some sort of disaster in that area and you lose so many that because there's none in the satellite areas that you lose them and you lose them forever. I know that's a big deal that's part of the reason for why they still don't move much on the Goliath. Like they got a season now finally, but you can only catch runts and you got to pay a fortune for them. But it's because that when it does go bad or they're really susceptible to say a cold shock that their numbers can drastically plummet. So I understand that all that goes into that, but as just a guy that's been observing it for a while, either they were just insanely off in their quotas in the past, like just astronomically harmful, or it seems like they might be, they've just tightened the belt a little too tight. Like it's getting, especially we talked about red snapper, like they're everywhere now. I catch red snapper I've caught red snapper, for instance, in St. Joe Bay, in the bay, like not where you'd ever think you'd find red snapper.
They're running charters in the bay, catching snapper. That's how many there is.
Yeah.
That's crazy. They're not supposed to be there.
Right. Well, you know, too, you see snook coming so far north now.
I have a theory about that.
Red tides pushing them out. That's and exactly then they're. And yeah, the red tide pushes them out. They move north to get away from bad water. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they should die off up here because it gets colder. But then you're finding snook, like the manatees, when it gets cold, they go up in the springs.
They're adapting.
Yeah.
There's actually charter boat captains that are running charters for snook out of the Steinhatchee River in Taylor County.
No kidding.
That is the first time in history that's ever happened is now. And my family has lived there since the beginning of time, and they've never seen snook there until now, until the Okeechobee fish kills. Yeah. And everything. We're catching bonefish and cast nets. You know, it's like they're not supposed to be up here. They're running away from, you know, whatever's down there.
Yeah, it's bad, seasonally bad water.
I don't want to get into causality, but, you know, water's getting – it doesn't take a whole lot, right? Water's getting a little bit warmer. Allows them to come up, right? The winters aren't as harsh. But the same problem, right? If you end up with a whole bunch of snook coming north, then also when you have a bad cold snap, you wipe out a bunch of snook if they don't get south in time. I don't know. Right.
Or get up in the springs. Like them. And the same thing, too, is, you know, they touted this year, the whole thing you talk about not having cold snaps. Like, this is the lowest number of manatee kills Florida's had in 30 years. I'm like, yeah, because we had a good die-off a few years ago. We kind of got back around down to carrying capacity, and we had a mild winter.
Mm-hmm. And they're chucking them lettuce.
Right.
Yeah.
This pisses me off a little bit, man. A lot of our wildlife budget, where's that money coming from, is going to feed manatees lettuce.
Yeah. And I think we really, I don't want them to die off either. I think they're cool creatures, yeah. But we do have a carrying capacity, and artificially inflating the carrying capacity by feeding them lettuce isn't helping them either.
Feeding wild animals.
Is there really too many manatees?
I think there is a Mosquito River Lagoon where we have no seagrass and we're trying to grow it back, and there's more manatees than there's ever been in recording. And you know, if you're trying to grow grass in a pasture, you don't cut 100 head of cows in there and expect it to grow.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
I'm a manatee fan. I'm not a manatee hater. I'm just saying that trying to grow grass and you got a grass eater, right, you're not going to have a lot of grass.
Like I said, yeah, can you imagine if they all of a sudden did a manatee rodeo? That some of the people that are let's say primarily motivated through emotion, and they got out there with the cameras. These guys are hauling manatees up in nooses and stuff like that. I mean, no matter how gingerly they're trying to treat them. Oh my God! You think that the bear hunt generated some hate?
Yeah.
Woo!
That'll never happen.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with the manatees that nobody wants to talk about is, you know, everybody wants to protect the manatees. You know, Mothers of America and all the tree huggers love manatees. You're not allowed to touch manatees. You're not allowed to be in a certain amount of feet around a manatee. You're not supposed to harass them at all. But our biologists and the people that love them so much take a rope and tie it around them and put a 20-pound buoy on it, and they drag it around everywhere for research. But if you're caught touching that thing, you're going to prison, or I'm taking your boat. But they can hook a saddle on that thing, and he just has to live with it. You're talking about torture. That's like they're slave footing them. They're ball and chaining them. They're dragging them around.
I don't know, man. Every summer, if you want to see manatees, I'll take you to places in the St. John's. You'll see manatees in 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. It's not even in the summer. Summer, winter, they're everywhere all the time anymore.
You go to Hall Over Canal. Right there in Titusville.
He's spot naming for manatee hunters.
You can't even put the boat in the water. There's so many manatees.
Yeah.
And it's good. I mean, they, you know, God put them there. They're supposed to be there, but there's not a shortage of them. I can tell you that. No shortage of manatees.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I like gopher turtles. There's no shortage of gopher turtles.
No, not anymore.
No.
You know what messed up the gopher turtles? Logging. When they invented the chopper, that big wheel that pulls behind skidders. And that chopper, just giant blades on a big drum full of water. They pull it behind those skidders, and it chops up, cuts every little brush, and caves in every hole.
Yeah, buries them.
That's what took our gopher turtles.
They can dig themselves in, but can't dig themselves out.
Yeah.
Hmm.
They run out of air.
Yeah, true. True.
No, these are all good problems
too.
Yeah.
When I was, they invented the chopper in my lifetime. And for in my county, there used to be rattlesnakes everywhere. We have no rattlesnakes now after they invented that chopper. They just like run everything over. Everything that lived in holes, all that stuff, if it wasn't in the water, if it was on the hill, it's all dead.
Imagine that didn't do much for the quail population.
When they quit burning, the quail population ended.
Yeah.
You burn, quail come back.
Sure. They got to have that. That's one of my favorites. You know, but I think these are happy problems, like as far as, too many manatees.
Right.
I mean, because, I don't know, there used to be a stellar sea cow out there and they ate every one of them.
Manatees are not the problem with the grass.
No.
The grass problem is coming from spraying pesticides and fertilizer on Bahia grass and St. Augustine grass and cutting canals and running that water into places where it doesn't belong.
Your pretty green yard right on the waterfront.
I know, man.
You look at the state of Florida. You look at the St. John's River. It flows north. Everything to the west of the St. John's, there's springs, there's rivers, there's lakes, thousands of them. Trillions of gallons of water at any point in time flowing towards the Gulf of Mexico. Nothing flows towards the Atlantic. Everything on the east side of the St. John's is dry hills, bay country. There's no springs. There's no rivers. There's no nothing dumping into Mosquito River Lagoon and all of that area that died. That used to be beautiful seagrass. But what they did is they cut canals, started building houses, and they started draining all of that water that God put there into the Mosquito River Lagoon. And then we started putting fertilizer everywhere and expecting you know, what's happening to our water? Like, well, we're polluting it. We're doing fresh water runoff, so with chemicals in there in a place where God didn't design it for.
As much as people would like to give, to have one boogeyman to chase to fix all the water problems in the state of Florida, there simply is not one boogeyman.
They've gone after sugar. They've gone after cattle. And they've done it successfully. And I'll even go so far as to say, let's say some things had to be done. But it's easy to go after sugar because there's a rather large entity and few producers. It's less easy to go after cattle, but they've gone after the large cattle ranches. But it's easy to say cattle and point to these guys, and everybody thinks they're incredibly wealthy. But the funny part about it is when you take a look at that, those industries said, fine, we'll comply. And they did. And the problem still didn't go away. And it's now you hear some folks saying, well, they used to do this. And I'm like, well, sugar and stuff hasn't done bupkis since like the 1980s. Like, they corrected a long time ago. And the problems are still exacerbating. And now they're running out of boogeymen to blame, because at the end of the day, we'll hit it right on the head. It's how do you go to the thousands and tens of thousands of people that, and it's not just because they live on a canal, right? I mean, in my neighborhood, when my son was a kid, we went around and put all those stickers on the thing. It says drains to lakes, drains to river, all the sewer systems.
Yeah.
It rains on your lawn. You're 3 miles from the creek. It still runs to that creek. It just goes there on a conduit, right?
Yeah, storm
still
the
same thing. Yeah. And it's all dumping into concentrated areas and running out there, and you wonder why you're getting algae blooms. So that's why, for a long time, for years, I mow my lawn 4 times a year, whether it needs it or not. And I don't fertilize, and I don't have nice St. Augustine grass anymore, but I keep them weeds short. They're green.
That's my excuse, too.
My wife doesn't let me get away with the I mow my yard 4 times a year, whether it needs it or not, because my neighbor started getting really frustrated.
It's wildlife habitat, butterfly habitat.
It was. Like, I'd have zebras running through that place.
Get you a sign out the front that says native butterfly habitat. Yeah. Just put it out in the front of the lawn. Now let it grow.
Then we got guys come out and mow the weeds for us.
Oh, man. And then you, on top of all that, you talk about the sewer and the fact that, especially along the Mosquito Lagoon area, you've got a lot of houses that were built in the 50s and 60s, and they're not on sewer. They're on septic, mm-hmm. and their septic is in the groundwater. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have any true drain field there. So it's just literal shit water right down into
Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
If it rains too much because there's too many people there, and they got like 1950s infrastructure.
Yeah, we have literally failing.
It is the shit water backing up into the streets.
Yeah, you have failing septic system or sewer all over the state of Florida. Just wasn't designed when it was designed. Wasn't designed for the capacity at which it operates under now.
Well, what are we going to do now with all the development? I mean, everywhere there's a patch of woods that's mowed down, and they're building houses or apartments.
Not septic.
No, simple.
But there's no. But there's no regulation to it.
Yeah, no. We're gonna blame sugar and the cattle farmers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's actually
quite a bit. If
the
development doesn't stop, it's just going to continue to be worse.
Right.
The only way to fix something is return it the way that it was, which is not going to happen.
No.
You're going to have to take bulldozers and you have to fill in all the canals. You're going to have to, you know, restore the water the way that it was 300 years ago. And it's not going to happen.
Nope. This is one of the subjects I feel very strongly both ways. Because as a free man and a guy like that, I mean, as much as I like that illusion, who the hell am I to tell you, Yankee, that you can't come here? Right? Because the people that are coming here for a lot of the same reasons that my great-grandparents and all things came down, and ultimately my parents came down from, right? Because I got 5 generations in Florida, but everybody leaves and then comes back. So who am I to tell you can't come? Right, and everybody wants to live here because it's pretty awesome living in Florida. But on the other hand, I'm like, you can come here, but I really wish you'd move into a high rise. Because I don't want you to cut down any more orange groves. I don't want you to cut down any more WMAs. Especially, I'm watching the changes that are happening up in North Florida, and it's just mind-boggling. And South Florida's already lost. Like South Florida, oh my God! From the time, I mean,
where are you talking about? North Florida,
Bay County, all around Pensacola, mm-hmm. Not just Bay. Where's Point Washington at? I can't remember the damn county's name off the top of my head, but all along the beach, the Forgotten Coast ain't forgotten. Mm-hmm. There are areas, and I'm not even going to name them because I don't want people going anymore, thank God for certain restrictions that have nothing to do with wildlife and whatnot, they can't build condos.
It's in Walton County.
Yeah, exactly. Walton County is the, I mean, they're selling, the transportation plans they're putting in place are absolutely huge. So they're going to develop like mad. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember the commercials. And they'd show these wide open spaces, and they ran advertisements, and it was come to Fort Walton Destin. This is like early 1980s. Well, shit, they came.
Yeah.
Still coming.
Shoo. So that's,
have y'all
40 ever, years, right?
Have 40 y'all ever years. Hunted Eglin?
No.
Air Force Base? I highly recommend it. But that there's a road that cuts it in half. Getting to the beach, it is the worst traffic I have ever seen in any city anywhere. It'll take you 6 minutes to drive at 4 a.m and it'll take you an hour and a half to drive your way home after work cuts out.
Oh,
because you know all those people that work, they're on the coast, they have to get back to the interstate up there, so there's land for them to live, and it's just terrible.
Yeah.
It's crazy how that, because you know they're not developing the base, you know, it's all, and you can't cut roads to that base. So there's just one way in, one way out, 4-lane road, just sitting still, and you just one car length, trying to move all the people over there.
The idea of the quaint little beach town, basically, once you get west of Panama City, clear well into Alabama. It's basically just one beach town now.
Mm-hmm.
There are breaks. But it's just population center all the way into, damn near all the way to Mobile.
Let's take a break real quick. The Under Pressure Outdoors podcast is brought to you in part by Hang Free. With a mission to provide top quality products for the best possible price, Hang Free believes that the saddle hunting experience is worth more than money. They create both tried and true products as well as debut new items to the saddle hunting community, creating a community of saddle hunters that don't have to break the bank to participate in the hobby that they love. Do yourself a favor and join the Hang Free family this hunting season. They truly have everything you need. Don't forget to use offer code UPO10 at checkout for 10% off your order at hangfree.co. So, Will, what's your opinion on how this is seemingly going to shape up in the Gulf when it comes to the new Red Snapper, potentially have a Red Snapper? Is it Red Snapper?
That's the gag grouper is the one that they're really attacking right now.
So the potential closure for that.
Right. Every year they've been giving us a little bit of snapper, a little bit of snapper, a little bit. They've been doing good with that. You know, they haven't been restricting, but the proposal this year with gag grouper is shutting it down all the way to 2026 and a rebuild program for the entire Gulf, which is completely unfair on every level. Like you were talking about, there's different areas where fish live and there's certain areas they do and don't. There's there's huge abundance in some areas and there's not so much in other areas. It's like if you go do a gag grouper count south of Tampa Bay, all the way to Pulley Ridge and Dry Tortugas, you're going to be very disappointed in your gag grouper catch because God didn't put them there.
Right.
That's red grouper and that's black grouper country. Now you come north of there all the way to where Florida turns east and west, and you have the biggest nursery for gag grouper in the world. I mean, that you get from Clearwater to Cedar Key. I mean, there's probably a bigger grouper population right there than anywhere else in the world for gag grouper. But like, if you want to judge grouper off of Venice, Louisiana, and you're going to say that them guys there don't have any grouper because such and such. It's like, well, it's not fair because the guys off of Clearwater can go catch 20 head of grouper in 5 hours. When, you know, you go over there and all you can catch is yellow edge grouper and snowy grouper because the terrain is different. You can't shut down the entire Gulf in such a broad area. In my opinion, the only way you can regulate that correctly and fairly to the fish and to the recreational anglers and commercial is shut it down in very tight sections because the bottom is different. You can't.
The gags are going to be where the limestone is.
Right.
Yeah.
They're going to be where the rock is. You know, you can't take away antelope in Kentucky and say, and you judge the antelope in Kentucky because there's none there because God didn't put them there. You know, then say that, oh, you're not allowed to kill any in Montana because there's none in Kentucky. And that's what they're doing in the Gulf. That's what they've done with our snapper in the Atlantic. They're saying, oh, we have no snapper, you know, off of West Palm Beach. It's like, well, there's no reef there.
Right.
You know, the only place where they're catching them is where they're naturally supposed to be in between, you know, Cape Canaveral and really South Carolina. That huge flat area, that's where your snapper is, and most of them are in Florida. And then you're going to judge that entire southeast section of the Atlantic Ocean off of that entire area. Now you need to break it down in different sections where they actually live. It's just your numbers are not correct. They will never be correct if you're judging off of a broad scope when they only live in certain places.
So
they're overpopulated in some areas and not in others.
I have zero experience or knowledge anything to do with commercial fishing. I know you have some, correct?
Mm-hmm, correct.
If they were to close that, how would they avoid, on a commercial aspect, how would a commercial fisherman avoid catching that as bycatch, or can you?
You can't avoid it. Bycatch has been a huge problem, and is they've tried to regulate that correctly so that it's fair for everybody. But there's no way to get around bycatch, and the Gulf did it the best compared to the Atlantic, is they let them kill anything. Or very small fish when a recreational anglers cannot, they're trying to get, the reason they're doing that, no matter my opinion of it, the reason they're doing that is trying to get away from the bycatch. Because if you catch 30 19-inch grouper and you release them all, most of them are going to die. You know, when you're out there in the off season, when you can only fish commercially. So the bycatch is a huge problem. They're saying that in the Atlantic right now, they're saying that we're not allowed to catch red snapper but 2 days a year because they're saying that our bycatch is more than the recreational limit should be. So there's so many snapper that we're killing more than we're supposed to kill.
So
it doesn't make sense.
Wait, say that again. So you're saying that the red snapper bycatch,
mm-hmm,
alone exceeds what the recreational limit for the season is supposed to be.
Correct. And that's why they won't give us a season. So they're saying there's so many of this species that you can't help but catch them, but they're going to regulate it because there's not enough of them. That doesn't make sense. And that's actually, you can.
That's wacky. But I guess I can kind of see it that, well, if there was fewer of them, they'd be easier to manage because we know there's none of them. But now there's enough of them that we're having a bycatch problem, but they're not yet big enough to where we want to just turn it loose again. They're like in a sandwich, so to speak.
How many do you want?
I don't know, man. I'm not a scientist. Everyone I can put in a freezer. There's
so many that the bycatch is more than you're allowing, that you're wanting people to catch.
You're trying to offset the harvest by not allowing recreational harvest because you're catching so many in bycatch.
So when the commercial guys go out and get into the red snapper and they have a whole bunch and it's not seasoned, what do they do with them?
Just throw them back.
But they don't survive.
Correct.
Well, now you're talking wanton and willful waste.
Well, you can't.
But in the Gulf, they run off of catch quotas that, you know, they sell. You can buy 2 million pounds of catch quota and then go out there and just catch as many as you can. In the Atlantic, they only allot you a certain amount of pounds a day regardless. So in the Atlantic, you can only keep 75 pounds of snapper a day as a commercial fisherman. That doesn't even buy your fuel.
Right.
Literally. It's, you know, it's completely different. It's run completely different over there than it is in the Gulf. You can have one boat. If he's got the money, he can buy all of the catch quota. And he'd be the only commercial fisherman, and he just kills all of them. Nobody else can.
Can you explain the Gulf catch quota? Because I've had other guys do it, and sometimes I think I understand it, and then I forget. Because I know that the entire Gulf red snapper catch quota is controlled by a cabal and a handful of guys.
Mm-hmm. It's, you can own it. You know, there's a lot of people. There's people that own most of the catch quota, and they've never even seen a red snapper.
Right, they farm parts of it out to other fishermen. How does that work? That's what I don't understand.
I'm not exactly sure on how it works, but I do know that the fish markets own most of it. So they'll sell the fishermen the catch quota, and then they'll buy the fish back from them, and they're making money on both ends.
Selling the fishermen the right to go catch the fish, then buying the fish from
and
them.
Setting
the market price to the consumer. That's like oil money. I mean, like, oh,
it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense when you say it that way. That, I mean, I hate to say it doesn't seem fair, but I mean,
well, here's what's ultimately going to happen. We had commercial hunting at one point in the country, and it got way out of hand. We damn near killed everything. If things get too out of hand, you'll lose commercial fishing. And I got a soft spot for those guys, right? But you'll lose commercial fishing. And the real travesty there is, like, I'm still going to get grouper. I'm still going to get whatever I'm allowed to catch recreationally. But everybody else is going to be eating swai. And if you know what swai is, man, that's like, that's a catfish. They're basically living on their own poop at this point. You know what I mean? Here's, you're going to be eating whatever version of catfish they want to bring you out of Vietnam.
Captain D's.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat when I went up to Cape Cod last year is every boat, and this is a whole new outlook. It's a whole new outlook on commercial fishing. And I don't know when this started. It might have always been this way. Every boat up there, not every, but I would say high 90% of every vessel you see on the tuna grounds is a commercial boat. We could get whatever boat we have, we could drive to Cape Cod, and we could buy a commercial license and become a commercial fisherman within a day and sell legally, paying our taxes, doing everything 100% legal, because what they figured out is people are going to go. People are going to go. They're going to kill fish. This is America. We have a God-given right for us to be able to go out in the ocean and fish. They're going to go, so we might as well let everybody sell these fish because they're catching 700-800-pound tuna.
Right.
And, like, let them sell it, you know, because they can't eat it all, and they're going to catch them. They're going to kill them. So what if we did that on a different scale? If there was no commercial fishing, because we were all commercial fishermen, but we can only keep our little bit of fish that they allow us to keep. But if you want to sell them, you can sell them. Or if you want to eat them, you can eat them. But you can only sell your two grouper instead of 2,000 pounds of grouper.
Yeah, the stores would still have plenty of grouper, but that would be the end of another. It's just, I feel very strongly both ways. Those guys that have been fishing for 3, 4, 5 generations, especially the small inshore fishermen, everybody. I one time had a conversation with somebody about the, what did he call it? The commercial fisherman lobby. And I was like, have you met these guys? Most of them are, they're just trying to figure out how to buy another day to keep enough food on the table, keep the light bills on, and put food in the boat to do it all over again. There ain't no money left over for a lobby, right? It's ridiculous. So I got a soft spot for them.
I got a soft spot for him because, you know, I fish with the guys. I have a lot of fun doing it. I've made money doing it. I would do it soon as possible. The next trip I could get out and go commercial fishing. That's awesome. But any God-given right that you have hunting and fishing, in my opinion, 1% less than 1% of the population should not be able to control the rights for every other American being able to.
Amen.
I mean, if one person owns 70% of the catch quota, and they can catch 70% of it, and that other, all of that little bitty other amount of fish is for the rest of America to be able to do, and we only get 2 days to do it. How is that right?
No, I'm not saying that is right, and that's a screwed up way to have the quota, because you're not letting the little guy participate, or the little guy's having to go buy it from the guy, like you said, that's never been out in a boat.
But if you did that where everyone was commercial fishermen, then the people that are causing all of these issues, the government, then they'd still make their money. Because the reason that commercial fishermen can kill more fish than everyone else is because all of that money is funneled back through the community and funneled through local government and big government, and it's shipped overseas and all of that, because the fish markets need fish to make money. You know, they don't make any money off a charter. They don't make any money off of y'all going fishing. They don't make any money whatsoever unless somebody brings a big bunch of fish to a fish house, and then they sell it in every which direction, including overseas, to our enemies.
Do you think that a commercial fishing like you're talking about up there, up north, to bring that to the Gulf and apply it to something like the grouper, do you think that the supply would be heavy enough to meet the current demand, or would you see an exponential? I guess it'd be great for the guy who's giving it to you as an individual, because you're going to get more money because it sells for more money. But then does grouper become unobtainium at the restaurant because it's?
I think it would be even more abundant. There's more of us,
but I'm just talking sheer poundage wise. How much, however many pounds you're bringing in grouper on the commercial side, I guess. But
I think what Will is saying is increase the limit from 2 to 8, but allow you to sell 6 of those fish.
But as soon as you took away the commercial and that catch quota, and then you gave it to fishermen as a whole, not commercial fishermen, not charter boats, not at fishermen as a whole, and then you distributed all of that tonnage to them, and then your limits would increase. And then if people can make money, they're going to make money.
Right.
If you can sell 6 grouper and keep 15 lane snapper and just have your meat, but I can make all of my money back from the fishing trip, people are going to sell those grouper. They don't care about meat that much.
Right. Well, I can understand that. Yeah. Oh, okay. You put it that way. Now you think about it like that. We come out on your boat. You take us out there. We're all quote unquote commercial fishermen. Then we can stop at the fish house, sell everything we don't want to eat or whatever back to them, make all the money back.
You paid for the trip. You made money towards your family. I tell you, the people in Chatham, Cape Cod, the locals there eat very little tuna.
I can imagine.
And they kill more tuna than anyone else probably in America.
So going back to that, what does it cost? What's your fuel bill running out there to the tuna grounds? What does it take to run a boat out and back? And you're out there sometimes 2-3 days, right?
Well, it all depends on the boat. You know, it's like flying an airplane, like which airplane you on.
Fair enough.
But my average cost.
Those wicked tuna guys, what are they spending in fuel? Of course, they've got different boats too.
But. Yeah, but they've got their cost is around $1,000 a trip.
That's it? Because you're getting on the show, they make it sound like the trip's 30 grand.
Those are very slow boats, and they're built for that. And they, you know, once everything's paid off, then you're okay. But when you know, if you have an $800,000 boat, you know, and that's why most commercial fishermen are driving.
That's a lot of tuna.
Yeah, most commercial fishermen are driving really raggedy old, you know, just. You know, sticks and bubble gum boats because it had to be handed down because they can't go buy something new. You don't make enough money. You kill all the fish, don't make enough money to sustain yourself, and take everyone else's fish that's trying to fish. To me, it's kind of screwed up. And I love to do it. I love to go out there. I love to kill thousands of pounds of fish. You know, as a fisherman, I want to catch as much as possible. But me catching all that should not mean that the other 100 people on the bank can go, they can't go fishing because I'm going out there.
So what is commercial fishing for grouper in the Gulf look like? How are they catching these fish?
They still have a few long lines, to my understanding. I've never actually the deep water long liners really for tile fish, snowy grouper, yellow edge.
Explain to me what that is.
You take a, let's say, a 60, 70, 80 foot boat, maybe steel boat, fiberglass, and they have a big hydraulic wheel on the back, giant wheel, and there's miles of cable or big monofilament fishing line that has droppers on it, and you'll put a big weight out, and you know, being 300 feet, that the pipeline that runs from New Orleans to Tampa, there's a long line set on that 365 days of the year, pulling up snowy grouper, yellow edge, golden tile, and they'll drop a mile set of long line gear with thousands of hooks on it, and then they'll come back and they'll pick it up. And then they'll go the other, drop it back down and go back. And then they'll come back with tons of fish.
You could see videos of it. As that thing's coming in, there's guys there and the hooks are coming up.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Just like the Perfect Storm.
That's what I'm thinking.
That exact same boat, but for a bottom dwelling species, you don't have it on floats where it's not 60 foot, you know, catching swordfish. You're laying it on the bottom and catching your reef fish.
Gotcha.
And they do that in shallow water too. There's very few permits. I wish I had the numbers on it, but you can't just look it up. But they do that for red grouper and gag too. But
basically, it's just a giant trot line. We catch catfish on. You throw it out, but you're only allowed so many hooks as a recreational fisherman. But we'll tie one end to a tree in a creek, and we'll run right, and then put the other end with an anchor and a buoy. Come back, pick the buoy up, put the anchor in the boat, and then start running down and pulling your catfish off it.
Yeah. Yeah, on a much larger scale, like you're
and
saying.
And the other way of doing it, and you can spearfish for them. There's a lot of divers that do it. And that's a lot smaller scale. And then you have a bandit reel fishermen, which is, you know, hydraulic wheel. You know, they'll drop four lines at a time, have four hydraulic wheels. Well, basically a leaf spring or a fiberglass spring that comes off with a pulley on it. And they're just rigging baits, and they'll stop, and they'll fish an area, and then, you know, they'll see a bite, and, you know, they'll slap that reel, and they'll reel them up. And it's just a hydraulic wheel. Hmm. And then those guys are just going not. You'll see they're just like a rat race out there. They'll pull a spot, fish for 5 minutes, go to the next spot, fish for 5 minutes, and they'll just hop around. And those guys, you know, they really, really bring in a lot of fish. It's very effective.
How deep are they fishing? They can't be fishing very deep if they're moving every five.
It all depends. It all depends on the species. If they're targeting gag grouper, you know, a lot of those fish are caught between 150 and 230 foot. Most of your snappers caught in 100 foot. Most of your red groupers caught from 70 to 100 foot.
Okay.
You know, that's... depending on where they are, how they fish, how the speed they fish, and
they're not hand cranking those lines up.
No,
it's still all running some sort of electric.
All the commercial fishing that I do with my friends and stuff is all hand crank, and a lot of your gag grouper too that are run off of outboards and stuff. They're the ones that kill all the little ones. The ones that I have a problem with is, you know, they're just fishing with jigs and little pinfish, and they're fishing the shallow water reefs where all the juveniles are, and they're killing thousands of pounds of fish that recreationally you're not allowed to kill. But being though with that bycatch deal, and you don't have to kill the big ones, they can go in there and just pillage them reefs.
That really doesn't seem right. I don't like the fact that laws apply some places and not in others. In that instance,
it's so big you can't get your head around it.
Yeah,
well, and you gotta change your law stick every year, because you don't know, you never know what's changed from one year to the next. If you're gonna saltwater fish, you better have the book sitting there right with you.
We have an app. FWC is Fish Rules. FWC told us to start using it because it updates on there before they get they get notified. And I mean, you wake up every morning that golden tile closure.
Yeah.
That just happened. There was no giant meeting. There was no bulletins being put out. They just said, hey, we're cutting you off. Sorry.
Is that because it didn't come from Florida, but came from the, what do they call it? There's the Gulf angle. There's the,
Southeast District.
There you go.
The Southeast District Council for the Atlantic. You know, they just decided. And you take, you know, someone your age didn't grow up with a phone. And there's no state or federal law that says you have to have this phone. And you have a paper printed out that you bought with your hard-earned money that says, hey, there's the laws right here.
Yep.
This is what I'm a law-abiding citizen. I'm going to catch what I'm supposed to catch, and I'm going to do exactly what I'm supposed to do as a man. You go out there and you catch those fish in March, and you come back and they take your boat because you didn't have this phone and you didn't see the new bulletin they printed. How can you charge somebody with something when it's printed in a book? They should only be able to drop new laws maybe two times a year or something. They say that, okay, the laws will change now. That way everybody can get the rules. They shouldn't be able to shut down stuff.
We had that happen in ports in St. Joe Bay. We come back with, I think it was a flounder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they changed flounder changed. Like on a Tuesday.
Yep. And he said, well, that just changed, so I'm going to let you have that one.
But he had every right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he could have.
Thankfully, that officer understood.
Big Booty Judy come running up, and he forgot all about us. So
That was kind of a sidebar, but that's ridiculous how they can change laws in the middle of a season without anyone knowing it and then prosecute people on it, being though you don't have a smartphone or Starlink out there while you're catching them.
Yeah. Well, you're right. It's not even just not having a phone. It's not having a smartphone. Because there's still plenty of people rolling around with a flip phone just because they don't want
to
deal
with a smartphone. It's unconstitutional to change laws during the middle of something and not have no correct way to notify the public, and you can charge them with that.
You're getting into the whole idea because it's actually, they're not changing laws, they're changing regulations. Mm. Which is kind of, you get into the whole thing. That's one of the things that's a little spooky when you think about just how we run the country. Because Congress, or whether it's a state legislature, they pass a law, and it's kind of a framework, and then they hand it down to a regulatory agency to flesh it out. Right? And so a lot of the times when you hear people getting fined and censured, it's not so, they didn't necessarily break the law, but they violated the regulation.
Right.
And that's where we run into, we refer to as breaking the law, but that's when all of a sudden they change the regulation on what's legal to keep as far as a flounder. The law didn't change. The regulation changed. The law just granted the regulatory agency the right to do so. But you still pay the fine.
I don't know. That's one of those things. I wish I could have found so much more information on this, considering they also considering, like we said, they already had a meeting on it. But, man, I tell you, if you're listening to this and you can get on the Gulf Reef Council's website, I'll look again on Monday when this comes out to see if something's come up by then. But today, February 28th, when we're recording this, I couldn't find anything. Nothing as recent as, when did this meeting take place? Wasn't but a couple months, month ago, month or two ago?
Yeah, I believe it ended February 1st is the last day of the meeting.
Yeah.
But those districts are also federal, right? That's not a state.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool with it. And if I'm going to have a problem with those councils, the Atlantic is the one they're terrible. The Gulf, usually they've been very pro angler. Because what they do is they recognize that there's different areas. Like Texas, they can kill the crap out of red snapper. Well, they got thousands of oil rigs that create wonderful ecosystems for them. And so they acknowledge that and said, hey, you can kill more than Florida. Florida doesn't have the reef system, and it doesn't support it, even though we do have a lot of snapper, but it's harder for them to understand that. So what they did is they gave it to Texas and said, hey, make your own laws under this umbrella. You can do this. And then Florida, you can do this. Mississippi, you can do this. And, you know, so forth. But the Atlantic says, you know, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, you're all the same. There is no snapper in North Carolina. Like, well, yeah, there's never been snapper in North Carolina.
Right.
I see a pattern. It's all southern states on the Gulf. Ain't a Yankee state among them. Common sense prevails.
Maybe. Huh? I don't know, man. It's that's tough. And I like the idea, like you suggested, the allowing that whole commercial, everybody to be a commercial fisherman. But that turns that industry, oh, my God. The uproar from doing something like that would be almost as if you just close it entirely. I think you've got too many people, your commercial fishermen are what's the word I'm looking for? Historical use practice. It'd be the same as you'd hear the same thing as if they said you can't run dogs in the Ocala National Forest anymore. Well, my granddaddy did it, and my great granddaddy did it. Generations of my family have all done it here. Why is it bad now?
Ask the bear hunters how that went for them.
Yeah, I understand that.
But I'd, at any time, though, if that is completely shutting down everyone else in society, if they can't do something because of a very small population, and you're, you know, creating laws around that, I think there's a problem with that.
Well, yeah. The funny part about this, guys are still going to fish.
Yeah.
If you tell them you can't go catch grouper, I don't think you're going to see fewer guys on the deck. They're just going to go target something else.
We're going to keep killing the grouper, and they're not going to get used. They're not going to get used in our families. They're not going to make money.
Oh, yeah, because you're still going
to
catch them.
They're going to die.
Yeah.
Our government that has to have that money, you're not going to make money off of it. Our families are not going to eat grouper, not going to buy it from the market or get it from off of our boats. They're just going to go to waste. They're going to keep feeding this huge shark problem we have. It's literally the shark population is making money off of this. I mean, they're loving it. They're like, keep throwing them back. We'll keep eating them.
Yeah, I mean, shark fishing got a bad rap for a long time, and I still think it's got kind of a gray cloud that hangs over top of it.
I think Will was saying that there's a common phrase, sharks got to eat too. Right, so one of the justifications you hear sometimes is like, well, it's already dead. Why can't I keep it? And the answer is, well, sharks got to eat too, right? In other words, nothing really goes to waste. It all goes back into the ecosystem. But I've had that happen. Like I've got my, let's say, 3 speckled trout on board. You're really trying to hit that redfish, and all of a sudden you catch another trout. And man, it might even be worse, you've already got like a 22-inch trout on board, and you only get one, and you lay into another one. Man, you bring that big bruiser to the boat, you let him go, and you just see him swim off sluggishly, and you're like, dead either way. It kills you, but you can't put him on the boat. Just the way it is.
Yeah, they did good with the deep water fish, with your, like, your tile fish and your snowy grouper and all those fish there. They should be dead when you pull them up. They don't have there's no size regulations on them because they knew that, you know, you need to keep the ones you catch. You have an amount you can catch and then shut down off. They're hoping that the anglers are responsible enough to stop and not keep. You know, you can only keep one snowy grouper per boat in the Atlantic, which is insanity, but that's a different topic. So, you know, you drop down there, you catch one, they're banking on it that you're not going to kill 10 trying to catch one big one.
Right.
Because they're all going to die. You know, they come up looking like, you know, inside-out marshmallows. You know, they that pressure really, really whacks them.
Where does a snowy grouper – years ago, I shot one in Jupiter, 60 feet of water, spearfishing.
He was really lost.
I was going to say, where – yeah, because the captain was making a big deal about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like how they free-gaff yellowfin tuna in harbors. Because he made a wrong turn, or like whales beaching herself. That was like a whale beaching himself.
Where do snowies usually hang out?
There, you should not ever see them inside of 200 feet.
Oh, yeah, he was way lost.
And 200 feet is...
That dude was at a sightseeing record, or sightseeing reef when I plugged him.
Realistically, they shouldn't be under 300.
Wow.
And what's the recreational limit on those? We're keeping one. Or not recreational, the commercial limit.
Well, it's a catch quota thing. You buy them in the Atlantic, so you can keep thousands of pounds if you can afford to buy the catch quota to make the money back when you sell it to the market. And they're, I think it's 200 pounds in the Atlantic. It's you can't keep a lot of them as a commercial fisherman over there.
Hmm.
They shut you down every day.
Yeah. I got a buddy who every time he's got his family has a condo in Daytona, every time he goes over there, he tries to pick it up at the market, bring something back.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, I've heard it's a really good eating fish. I've never had it, but
it's the best grouper out there.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Snowy is?
Oh yeah.
I don't know, man. It was all just fish to me.
It has the best fat to oil content when you're cooking it. It's like you can cook the hell out of a snowy and it still be moist. When you take a lean gag grouper and you can burn it really easily because of that. Well, who won't have the fat content in it?
What's the most out of place fish you've pulled in on your boat?
Dang, I'm drawing a blank. I got some good ones. We caught a king mackerel in the off the dock at there in New Smyrna in the river.
Really?
Yeah, he's not supposed to be there.
Like all the way up there where you're parking your good Lord.
We've caught red snapper at the jetty.
Yeah, that I can.
Yeah, but like that I think is because they're starting to. We're talking about how prolific they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I was talking about catching them is, I mean, the people on the beach are right over there.
Mm-hmm.
We're fishing on a pylon. You've been to those pylons, right? You and I'm sorry, look at a bill. We fish those pylons where you caught those. We were catching sand trout, and we were catching. Yeah, I've pulled red grouper or red snapper off there.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like ain't supposed to be there, man. But I've also caught gag grouper there, right? Which kind of makes a little more sense. But
grouper.
Not keepers, but I've caught gags there.
Yeah, we've caught grouper on topwater plugs.
Yeah. Oh, so have I, but in shallow water in the wintertime.
Yeah, I mean, they're way more susceptible to shallow water compared to a snapper. A red snapper. A mangrove snapper come in really, really,
right,
really shallow.
It's kind of where they get their name.
Oh, I caught that bearded Bertula last time I was here?
No.
I caught what the, a.
Hang on, let me get them.
Oh yeah,
bearded Bertula sounds like you need a shot.
Took me 2 weeks to find out what this fish was. It's a Pacific bearded Bertula, and I thought I had the world record, but I didn't because they say once it swam through the Panama Canal, it doesn't count as a Pacific bearded Bertula anymore.
This thing.
Yep, and my picture looks way cooler than that one.
That thing is ugly. It looks like a mudfish.
It looks like a mudfish and an eel.
Yeah.
The hell was it doing over here? That thing looks like it should be in the Amazon.
I caught it on a butterflied pinfish in 400 foot of water.
And it either swam around the Cape or the Horn or it came through the Panama. Couldn't have come through the canal. No
way. It honestly, there's probably. There's probably just a very small amount of them in the Atlantic, and biologists say that that's a Pacific fish, and they're not really. There has been other recordings of them caught here. It's just very, very, very rare. I caught it when my client reeled it up, and I said, guys, I have no idea what that is, but we're taking it home, and we're gonna figure it out. We may go three lifetimes and never see another one of these things. Maybe you caught the only one on Earth. I don't know.
We'll name that fish after you.
I think he mentioned that though. I think
we skinned.
He was here at another podcast, and you hadn't figured out what that fish was.
Yeah, we skinned it out, and it was just, the meat was incredible. It looks like lobster meat.
Really?
Yeah.
Eat good?
I didn't. The guy that caught it took it on. Oh, he paid for it, so I was like, please give me a piece. But he took it on. But what I've learned is all the weird fish, all the ugly, the ones you think are poisonous, all that, that most of the time their meat is incredible. Like those oceanic puffer fish, the big silver ones, it's long. I don't know if y'all seen them.
Mm-mm.
They're a plague. When they come through, they'll eat everything. They'll bite holes in mirror lures. You know, they got, you know, they're big, heavy, like cow-like teeth. And that is a terrifying-looking fish that you shouldn't eat. But if you skin that thing out, the meat is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've heard the puffer fish, some of them, they got stuff that could kill you in
their head.
Yeah, in their head.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, I've seen people skin them out. I don't know that I've ever ate it. But I don't know, man. Doing it. Huh?
I ain't doing it. It's
I don't believe that.
No, man. Like, because it is. It's like really nasty. I forget what the Japanese call it, but it's a delicacy.
Yeah. But yeah. An oceanic puffer fish looks a little bit different. Then they don't actually like puff up like the little spiny ones that looks like a beach ball. I mean, he'll actually be a foot long and slender and actually have a fillet. It's a completely different fish, and he's silver.
Hmm.
So what are the ones that like if it's not prepared by the right guy in Japan, it'll kill you? Those are the ones
that you're thinking
little spinies.
About. Yeah.
Okay. Because those things, if you get your, I'm lucky I didn't lose a digit. I'd hooked one and the hook was in there good enough that I went after it with a pair of pliers. When that sucker bit down on the pair of pliers, I was like, good God.
They will bite your finger off. I mean, yeah. OFF off, gone.
Yeah. And my buddy was like, you need to be careful of that thing, man. He'll clip you.
When you pull that gulp up and half of it's gone, that's probably what took it was one.
100%.
Really? Yeah.
That's like trying to get him up with the pliers and just could try to shake the hook out and they get all upset.
You can see their teeth marks in it.
Pull up to that mic there a little bit.
You can see their teeth marks in it.
Yeah.
When they bite them.
Get them out of the water, just holding onto the hook, shaking it with a pair of pliers, and they puff up and they land right and just float like a buoy for a little minute.
They can take a treble hook and bite it flat like you stepped on it.
Good mash God. It flat.
So once those things balloon up like that, I mean, are they pretty much done? That can't be good for them.
No, they're built to do that.
They fill up with air, and they'll float on top of the water, and then they literally go and sink and swim off.
Yep.
Cause I've seen them do that.
Yeah.
And of course, after it gets really nasty, you find pufferfish dead on the water all over the place. But they don't ride out tide well, apparently.
Now I can tell you, underwater, if you get them to blow up before you get them to the boat, that's a fight right there, buddy. Because he's really heavy. Huh. You think you've got a monster, and you pull up this stupid water balloon full of out of the bottom of the.
Because it takes a lot. Like I've had them because the first couple times I ever caught one, I wanted to see it puff up. And like, I'm bonking that thing on the head, dunk, dunk, dunk. And they wouldn't puff up, man. I probably hit three or four of them before finally I was like, oh, that's what they do.
I just find that holding the hook by like the jig head and shaking it to get them to fall off of there, they used to get upset, puff up. And then they float a few feet from the boat, sizzle down, and swim away.
Wow. Huh. But, I guess I just don't hit them hard enough.
I wasn't even hitting them. I'm just giving them a little shaking baby syndrome before I send them back in the water.
Yeah, some of them puff up and some of them don't.
Yeah, some of them don't. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't fish enough to catch any strange fish. But hopefully we can see something come of this here soon and get something figured out. And I don't know. I don't want to see more season closures because it's easy. It seems to always be easy to close a season, but it's 10 times harder to get them to open it back up.
That's because they don't want us out there. I mean, they do not want us fishing.
There's one more component we didn't talk about, but it is real. And that is, you got to figure that whatever the fish population is, even it's relatively static, right? I mean, for whatever number of fish out there that 40 years ago, there was like 1/6 of the number of people chasing them as there is today. Right? So if it was safe to take, if you could take 1,000 fish out of a population and there used to be 10 guys fishing for them, right? Everybody gets 100. But then if you got 100 guys fishing for them, everybody gets 10. And now that you got 1,000 guys fishing for them, everybody gets 1.
Right.
I think that does come into play.
It definitely does. There's way too many fishermen. There's way too many boats on the water. But
blasphemy. Don't take my boat.
But you can't. You should not be able to tell an American he cannot go fishing.
No, I feel very strongly both ways.
There's way too many jet skis.
Yeah, nobody needs those assholes.
Yeah, but with an increase of people, it's either you have to say, okay, no one's allowed to fish, or you have to reallocate all of that tonnage to everyone. You have to disperse it out to everyone, and that's the only way I can see it.
Well, they say that we're, as a species, we're supposed to plateau out about 9 billion people, and that might happen during our lifetime, like on the planet. That after we hit 9 billion, for some reason, there's a lot of people think we'll start going backwards the other way. So
yeah,
the good news is we are approaching max capacity on your fishermen. It should be getting better within a couple of generations. I don't know why they think it's going to go the other way. Probably because people start banging into each other, they get ornery and start shooting.
Very, very possible.
Imagine the population of Ukraine ain't what it once was.
Well.
So, ooh, that's cold.
Will I? I thank you for joining us, man. You got any closing thoughts?
Just be a responsible fisherman. I mean, if you want things to get better, you just got to do your part. I mean, that's as a broad scale. I mean, if we all did what we were supposed to do, and you know, you show animals respect, kill as many as you can for the right purposes.
As many as you can respectfully.
Yeah, absolutely. We all grew up, you know, and you know, as much as possible. And now you look back and you're like, there's, you know, times when you were very fortunate. Like, did you need 100 of this, or you know, 50 of that, or you know, if you have enough meat, maybe you shouldn't get your limit. I mean, right. That's an unpopular opinion, but you know, if you have no use for it, you know, being a good killer that day might not be the right thing for, you know, your grandchildren. And just thinking about it, like having that mindset, I believe if we all have that mindset, things will look better down the road.
I can agree with that.
And I'm the biggest killer of them all. I love it. But you have to think about these things. You have to think about the future generations of humans. You have the future generations of whatever the animals you're hunting. Or fishing or whichever. Just as a human being, as an American, as an angler, as an outdoorsman, we owe it to our friends, family, and the animals to be the best, you know, outdoorsman we can to preserve everything around us.
Amen. No, I mean, I was laughing about that, kill as many as you can respectfully, but I also say that tongue in cheek, knowing that, yeah, you know, the reality is because of all the things that our predecessors did, Ducks Unlimited, Pittman Robertson, Duck Stamp, take your pick, that there was a time where they were almost all gone. And actually, I labeled all the government things, actually, but then you look at what the different charities like National Wild Turkey Federation, Rocky Mountain Elk, take your pick, Bighorn Sheep, Ducks Unlimited is the granddaddy, you know, that it's us and the people that are listening to this right now. Like, everybody else gets to enjoy it, and yeah, we kill them, but if we didn't put value on them, there wouldn't have been people complaining about it, and we'd have killed them all off long ago. Institutions would have killed them.
Yeah.
Right? So, amen to us.
The only people high that fives. Care about them is us. The only yeah. people that care is the people
it's
that
an irony.
Are hunting them and catching them.
Yeah. No, one of those guys is like, you know, if it came down to it, like, no matter what the species, man, if all of a sudden there was some kind of squirrel plague out there and you said I couldn't shoot squirrels anymore, I'd be like, all right, man, I'll take a few years off. So I guess I kind of feel that way about the grouper, too. But I got some places out in the Gulf, especially in the wintertime, man, where if there's three of us in the boat, we want to put 6 fish in the boat. We're done by 8 a.m. You know, it's just they're there. Wham, wham, wham. You have to go through a few to get to the ones you can keep. But if we want to put 6 keepers in the boat, we'll go through a dozen to get to those 6. You know, but it just seems.
But as a commercial fisherman, I could pull up to your hole there that you're talking about, and all them ones that you went through, I'd just kill them all. I'd take my 2,000 pounds, wreck that reef, and move on. And now you and your family and your friends can't be responsible outdoorsmen and go there and enjoy that and get what you can legally get and go on about your day.
I don't argue against that. Yeah, it's a pretty big.
I see an issue there.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It seems like you can't take it all out of the recreational side. You can't take it all of the recreational side. It's got to be an even playing field. But what's that? That's all subjective too.
Yeah.
What's fair?
I think wild game should not be used as profit to the government.
That's a.
I understand licensing.
Come on, that microphone again.
I'm sorry about that.
I understand licensing, but when it comes to tonnage of meat being sold for financial gain of state and federal government, I don't think that's right.
Okay.
If you want to sell meat, buy cows. If you want wild game, you should go harvest it yourself.
Right.
I can't respect elk meat unless I pack it out of the mountain. If I bought an elk steak, it's just a lean beef steak to me.
Right.
Man, I had a buddy give me a package of elk burger, and it was a gift of kindness. It was 3 years ago. That elk burger is still in my freezer for that exact same reason. It's elk. I love it. I know it's good. And I've had it, but it's like whenever I'm in there digging around for what I'm going to use, I always look at it, but I'm like, that one, that whitetail that I got millions, tons of it. It's like, I always go to that first. And that's the whole reason. It's like, that one I didn't put in here.
If you want to bring it over here, I'll respectfully dispose of it.
Yeah, maybe I should. I should make some elk burgers and bring them over for freezer burn or something stupid, yeah. too. And that'll be a real waste.
Make a good chili with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That works.
Anyway. The commercial thing, where do you draw the line? That's the one thing I'm always hesitant about is I can agree with everything you said about the wild game and the fish. But let's say they go after the commercial fishermen and we shut down commercial fishing in its entirety. Or certainly they can't do it. It'll always be out there in the federal waters, but the next one up's the guides.
Mm-hmm.
And then after they get rid of the guides, who do they go after? Because there are people out there they seem very vocal, even though they're a vocal minority. They really want the quota to be zero. Everybody should be eating soy or swy.
Nope.
I just don't know where the line is. Somewhere in there's a right answer. I just don't know what it is.
Well, Will, I'm going to close this out with an odd question for you. You want to win a suppressor?
Yes.
I'll give you the details. Everybody else, you can find them in the podcast description. We're giving one away. We'll catch you guys next week. As always, we thank you guys so much for being part of the Under Pressure Outdoors family and hope you enjoyed the show. If you'd like to help us out, first and foremost, if you haven't already, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and tell us what you like about the show. If you want exclusive access to hunts and the ins and outs of specific WMAs and why we choose to hunt there, and a lot of other sweet stuff we have planned, join our Patreon. So far on the docket for this year, we'll be hosting 2 whitetail camps and 2 small game hunts at a minimum. Plus, you'll get a sweet discount code to save when you shop the UPO Nation website, as well as get early access and discounts on future events. It's $5 a month, and it'll pretty much pay for itself. As always, if you have any questions you'd like answered on the show, reach out to us on social media or at underpressureoutdoors@gmail.com. We'll catch you guys next week.